Good morning. It's Monday morning, a gorgeous day in Park City, headed to quite a nice temperature today. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and this is Mountain Money on another spectacular day in the park. And we have some interesting guests today. We're going to talk about some fun local recreational opportunity and what everybody needs to know this month. And we're also going to talk about mountain climbing and how it relates to sales. We have Susan Urschler with us, and she has conquered the seven summits on the highest peaks on all seven continents, along with her husband. And she is a sales training executive, lectures to Fortune 500 companies, and she's going to talk about mountain climbing and conquering the seven summits of sales, the name of her new book.
And if you can do all seven summits on the continents, more power to you, and probably have great advice on how to get mentally tough and bring some of those skills over to sales. After Susan, we're going to switch gears. Larry, vacation season is rapidly wrapping up. I would say probably has wrapped up. But this summer, we saw a lot of Airstream trailers, those vintage trailers, the all-aluminum trailers. And right here in the area, we've got Intermountain Airstream. They have opened Utah's only full-line Airstream authorized dealer, and you can buy a new unit with them, or you can keep your existing unit repaired or restore a new one with them. And we're going to hear from Dmitry Sorokovsky and Casey Schwartz about their business. Then our final guest is going to be Mark Blocker, the managing partner of National Affinity Services. It is currently open enrollment, or will soon be open enrollment, for Medicare and the Affordable Care Act insurance policies. So you're going to want to hear what the alternatives are available there. You're listening to KPCW on this morning, Mountain Money. Stay tuned.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And we have on the line with us now Susan Urschler. She, along with her husband Phil, became the first couple in history to climb the seven summits. She's an international speaker, an award-winning executive. She's served in leadership positions for Fortune 500 companies for more than two decades, and is also the author of another book, Together on Top of the World. Welcome to Mountain Money, Susan.
Thank you.
Well, we're only at 7,000 feet here, but we have a lot of climbers who like to go a lot higher, and are ski summits reached to 10, so we know something of mountains and mountain adventures here. But you were up on a ledge near the top of Everest years ago, I think 2001 maybe it was, and you were struggling to get to the top, and you looked at your husband and you each said, "Why on earth are we doing this?" I guess that is the, did you have an answer in that oxygen-starved environment?
Well, yes, and to tell you the truth, in 2001, it was 63 days that we'd been climbing up and down the mountain. And I will have to say, my husband, Phil, is an international mountain guide, and he did climb it in 84 and became the first American to climb the north side. So honestly, I was the one asking myself, what am I doing up here? Because I was definitely, I had climbed higher and higher over the years, but it's just when you're beat up that much and you're in a lot of pain, I was asking myself a lot of times near the summit, why are you doing this? But I just had to keep telling myself to push through the pain, because it's not going to last. Pain's temporary. I really had to keep telling myself that.
And in this book, you relate sales to mountain climbing, and you use examples from the climbing world. In the sales world, what do the two have in common? I guess reaching an objective, but you could do that a lot simpler ways than climbing to the top of Everest. Okay, Susan, are you there? I don't think so. We're going to have to try to reestablish a signal to Susan, and we will do that shortly, and we will work on that. And let's, while we're doing that, move ahead and talk about some other things coming up. We'll have coming up a discussion about the Airstream trailers, which should be interesting. And following that, we'll talk about this is open enrollment month. We'll talk about what you need to know about health insurance.
And while we're waiting to reconnect with Susan, Larry, you were gone last week, and you picked a good week to be gone because, boy, it was kind of crazy in the market. I don't know if you saw what was going on there, but quite a bit of volatility.
Yeah, I want to have this discussion because because everyone and his dog has a 401k, and it's kind of frightening. When you see drops of the magnitude of those, just how far did the market drop? There were some days with 200 and 300 point drops, weren't there?
Yeah, and some were. Interday was like a 500 point spread.
Yeah, and at some point in the day, it was much worse than toward the end of the day.
And yet, you know, if you look at where we ended the week versus where we started the week, nowhere near as volatile as the intraday moves would lead you to. And I think a large part of that was, you know, the corporate earnings are good. There's some solid news out there. But, you know, there's also some scary news out there. The 500-point drop happened on the day when we found out that one of the nurses caring for the first Ebola patient, unfortunately, it got on an airliner. And now we all wonder, gee, what's the spread of that disease going to be? I understand we have Susan back on the line. So let's continue with conversation on Everest, and maybe towards the end of the show we can talk more about
this.
Yeah,
we'll pick up on the gyrations of the market last week. But Susan, you fell off the summit there, at least off of our phone system. Are you back now?
Yes, okay. Yes, for some reason I could not hear. Sorry about that.
Okay, well, the next question I was going to ask is, okay, mountain climbing and sales, how do the two relate? Why a book that connects the two?
Yes, and I'll tell you, during the 10 years that I was climbing the Seven Summits with my husband, I was also advancing my career in business. And there are so many skills and strategies that were similar. And what I learned in business, actually at the time when I was climbing the Seven Summits and kept going higher and higher, Mount McKinley, Denali in Alaska, and Cerro Aconcagua down in Argentina, that's almost 23,000 feet, I did have to learn skills, and I applied what I had learned in business. And so many of those skills are the same. For example, though, just being able, I mean, you got to start with a vision, of course, having that really clear vision of where we're going, because the vision will drive our activity. So personally, while I was preparing for Everest, I had two numbers that I had visualized. One was 29,035 feet, the top of Everest, and the other was $300 million. That was what I was responsible for in business. And so by writing those down, looking at them every single day, becoming my mantra that that's what we're going to do, climb to the summit of Everest and back down safely, that was what really, you know, made everything work very well. But of course then, you know, and in the book there's so many more strategies and everything written out. But for example, we have to have a plan, having a really well plan mapped out to climb Everest. That's a climatization plan. To advance our career or grow our businesses, we have to have a real clear plan written out. And then we just need to keep going back and persevering. We're not going to stop. When we get knocked down, some way, somehow, we've got to go back until we achieve a vision.
So, Susan, you mentioned that your husband's a renowned international climbing guide. So these were typical goals for him. I'm guessing growing up as a child, you weren't thinking, gee, someday I want to climb Mount Everest. So I want to connect, because oftentimes when we're leading a team, we have a goal. And we have to inspire others on our team to share that goal. What did you learn about that? Because I doubt you would have had the mental toughness to go through those tough days and actually summit Everest if your husband's goal had not become truly your goal in your heart as well.
Yes, and that's And that's really true. It's to be able to, you know, to be able to have that, I guess, that drive, if you will. And I want to go back to what you just said. You're absolutely right. I live here in the Northwest, in Washington, is where I live, and Mount Rainier is right here, 14,000 feet. I had never hiked or climbed a thing until I met my husband at 36 years old. So I'd never dreamed that. But it happened over the course of time. At the very beginning, it was not a big dream to go climb the Seven Summits for me. You know, first of all, we climbed Mount Rainier. Ah, that was incredible. It's like the sense of accomplishment to stand on top, just like when we reach peak performance in business. It's like, wow, well, let's go a little higher. So we kept going higher and kept going higher, you know. So that was real critical as far as just taking it kind of one step at a time, going higher and higher, and then it became a very clear vision for sure.
Now, you use a lot of climbing analogies as you lay out your strategies for increasing sales, like starting out as you're planning, traveling light and planning the route. What are the analogies there as they apply to business?
Well, in traveling light, you know, in this world, of course, we're all in this information overloaded world, and to be able to try to get everything done. And this was my concern because, again, I was training and working out every single day to get ready to climb higher mountains. But then I've got a business position that I'm working many, many hours. And so we had to really become very disciplined on what we're going to do every day. We can't get it all done. We've got to travel light. So for in business, if we worked on emails all day long, every day, and didn't have a plan out of what we're going to do for the day that's really going to lead to great success, that can impact our business for sure. So just so that we just make sure our vision drives the activity, because that's what's going to, you know, allow us to really get there. So, traveling light, we're not going to get it all done, of course. And then you also asked about the plan. We had a plan of who, what, and where, especially in business. With whom are we going to work? Making sure that we know who our targeted customers are, targeted markets, what do they have today, listening to their needs, and where are we going to take them? We've got to be the trusted guide. We've got to be able to provide them a solution that's going to make their business grow, that's going to help their bottom line. If we can help make them successful, of course we're going to be tremendously successful.
You know, you mentioned about having a plan and focus and not being able to get everything done and the importance of that focus. You know, I think another important thing, certainly in sales, is being able to deal with setbacks. And you have an analogy in Everest, too. If I remember correctly, you went out to Everest twice unsuccessfully, and it was on your third attempt that you actually summited. And what is that process like dealing with setbacks, both on a big trip like that, as well as coaching your team and helping them succeed to ultimately reach their goals?
Yes, and that's something that we're all, of course, going to deal with, and especially when we go after those really big goals. And on Everest, when we turned around, and I'll tell you also, Larry and Doug, we turned around after 63 days, and it was actually because we were on summit morning, but the jet stream was just nailing us, so we were in a tremendous storm. We would have kept going, but my husband's eyes had frozen over, and there's no way. You know, he had lost his vision. Thank goodness when we got down, we realized it's a temporary condition. His vision came back. But if we wouldn't have turned around, that could have been a fatal mistake. When I got back home, personally, I felt like a failure, because I just missed the biggest peak of my life, and we didn't have a plan to go back. And we achieve, you know, we have that in business all the time. We get knocked down. Either a customer tells us no, our boss tells us no, someone tells us no. And so we just turn that into a not yet. I have to look at it as a not yet. We've got to do something different, put a new plan together. But if it's the right thing to do, then we just need to keep going back.
Yep. And what about failing privately versus, and failing's the wrong way, dealing with setbacks privately versus dealing with them publicly? I imagine all your friends knew you and your husband were heading out. You were gone for 60 days. You came back. And that was a very public struggle for you guys. What's your advice for folks about keeping their goals private versus public?
Yeah, and, you know, that it was. And However, though, people were telling us, hey, you got really high on Everest. Hey, you climbed 6 of the 7 summits. And that's true. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, I realized that that's not a bad objective, but it wasn't the vision. It wasn't our vision. So, yeah, I don't know. That was, you know, we had told our families, people knew about this, and it was hard to deal with because no matter what they said, if you were running a marathon and you didn't finish it, hey, I didn't finish it. I got far, but I want to finish it. If that's your vision, then that's pretty tough to deal with. But, you know, it's like that's what happens, and it doesn't last long. I mean, I think we just have to go home, go back to work, and regroup. And I was set back in business, that's for sure, the first year. I was moved into another department because I was not driving results. But it helped me, because what that does is it's like, okay, you're either going to quit or you're going to start going higher. I decided I'm going to work harder. I can work harder in the beginning to make up for my inexperience. I'm going to become an expert. I'm going to educate myself. I'm going to educate others. And armed in that way, I went back, and it took a year. But I started really advancing my career after that because I started driving results.
You know, you have a number in your book, and I was looking for it and can't find it, as to how many people are engaged in the business of sales. You know, one thing that occurred to me rather recently, I guess since I came to this radio station 4 years ago, I spent my whole career as a journalist. And here I had to start selling, the community on the public radio station. And it occurred to me, actually, I've been a salesman all my life, being a news reporter, because I have to go out every day and sell somebody on wanting to be on TV when it's maybe the worst day of their lives in some kind of a news event, and the close is when they say, yes, I'll do an interview, and we grab the camera and do the interview. So a lot of people who maybe don't think they're in sales really are in some fashion or another. Just how important is learning sales skills to just daily life?
Yeah, and you know, I see that the exact same way, and it's you know, every person. Really, I feel, and I believe, and this is changing in this world, and of course, every business needs to grow. And so all of the positions are now responsible somehow, some way, for helping that overall, overarching goal or vision of the company that we're in. So I totally agree with that. You know, every person, whether we're in sales or not, whether the word sales is in our job description, we still have to be able to build relationships that are going to, you know, allow us to have that consensus with colleagues. We've got to persuade leaders to provide resources. We've got to win support from suppliers, partners, clients. If we can't do that, then again, we may not reach success. And so whether sales or not, we've just got to be able to learn all these techniques as far as, you know, having the vision, building those relationships, building our networks inside of our organization, outside of the organization. So honestly, you know, all of those techniques are all listed in this book and others, but it will help as far as, you know, if we look at our positions that way, for sure.
You know, Susan, we're all in one way or another involved in sales, as Larry points out. We're all in one way or another involved in being leaders to a team, and the scope and the depth of that team is different for all of us, and the purpose is different. But could you talk a little bit about how you go from being an individual contributor to meeting your own objectives to now all of a sudden, in your case, you mentioned earlier the $300 million sales quota. That was not your personal quota. That was your team's goal. Mm-hmm. How do you go from being a individual contributor to a successful leader?
Yes. And, you know, I kind of like to use the analogy of in the mountains, because when you're a guide in the mountains, the leader on the mountain has to think like a guide, not like a climber. So it's your responsibility to help others achieve the summit. And you also have to help them believe that they're going to be able to get there and giving them feedback. And it was the same thing in business, you know, that I incurred. As I progressed in my career, I needed to lead teams to success. And you're right, that $300 million, that was my team's objective, and that was our vision. And what I needed to do was to hold my team up very high. So before I had a team, before they were direct reports, as you had just mentioned there, you know, I needed to be able to get them to believe they were going to push past their perceived boundaries, whether they were my direct reports or not. Because if I could help make them successful, again, I'm going to be successful. And that's how I turned into a leader and was able to advance my career to a vice president in a Fortune 500 company. Because when I can bring others up and have that high expectation, give them constant feedback, recognition, never letting them quit, then we can progress our careers. It's not going to happen overnight, but it'll take time. But it's kind of the same thing. If we can guide our colleagues to success, we can guide our team members, and then, of course, if we can guide our customers to success, it just leads to success for us.
Well, and a lot of those are learned skills, right? Mm-hmm. And other parts of it may be parts that you're born with. And I want to ask you about this, the mental toughness that I mentioned earlier. You don't get to the top of Everest unless you've got that mental toughness. It's a very tough journey. And can people learn to be mentally tough? I have some friends I mountain bike with that are ex-military, and it is unbelievable how they can compartmentalize pain. And even when they don't have the strength to do a climb, they can keep up with the group, they can lead the group, because early in their lives, they were taught mental toughness through their experiences in the military, that many of us that haven't, myself included, haven't gone through the military lack. Is that something that you can learn to really get that mental toughness that allows you to do something as amazing as climbing Everest?
I really do believe so. I was the youngest girl in my family, the only girl. I had three older brothers, and we were all kind of taught, you know, don't cry so much, don't, you know, don't, you know, be tough. And it really did help, because it's like then we were able to achieve our accomplishments, right? But I do think that, you know, I mean, I don't see myself as being that, you know, all that strong or whatever. It's just that if it's not going to happen, there's no reason we can't continue to make it work. I'm 5'2". Again, on Everest, on these climbs, I didn't see myself carrying a pack like that I was going to need to carry, that, you know, all this. But
it's a big pack. I saw the pictures.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's like, especially on McKinley, because when we did it, there's no porters, there's no Sherpas. We're carrying everything. And I just had to really get that out of my mind. It's like, forget about that pack on your back, you know. And I think, again, I hate to keep saying this as far as the vision, but it was so important for us, because if I had that vision, and I would see ourselves standing on the summit, then when we, you know, had these setbacks, or it's like, I can't do this, I'm not strong enough, I'm not tough enough, and believe me, I was telling myself that a lot. I just have to keep coming back and saying, yes, you can. Keep going. There's no reason you cannot make the summit. Someone's already climbed Everest. Someone's already become a vice president in business. It's like, why can't you? And that's what I had to just keep telling myself.
Yeah, Susan, we need to let you go, but just one last. When you make those final steps and you reach the highest of the seven summits, or any of the seven summits, McKinley, Aconcagua, and Kilimanjaro, and others, what's it like when you reach that summit? And especially on Everest, you almost have to turn around as soon as you touch the top. You've got to get back and start the journey down. But what is that moment of elation like? And how much time do you get on the summit of Everest? And then I guess the final part of the question, and this is really getting to be a complicated question that needs a simple answer, is there any sense of letdown or disappointment, or it's like, oh, okay, I've knocked that off the bucket list, and that was a big one. What's left?
Yes, and you're absolutely right. To answer that very quickly, on Everest, it's like, oh, that sense of accomplishment. I was just like, oh, amazed. You know, I'm just I'm feeling that sense of accomplishment. I loved it. I started crying. But then you got to get back down. So the fear comes right back because you got 2.5 days to go up, down everything you just came up. So, you know, you get to celebrate at the end. And I felt a contentment and that I'd never felt before. I loved it. I thought my life was going to be perfect. I just reached the seven summits. But then when I got home, yeah, came down a little bit because it's like you don't have a goal anymore. That was hard. And what I decided is, hey, you spent the first 50 years of your life going after your dreams. Now I'm going to help others. And so we do help keep girls in school in Nepal. That's our that's our biggest dream now.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us, Susan Urschler from Seattle area. The book, Conquering the Seven Summits of Sales, From Everest to Every Business, Achieving Peak Performance. Thanks for joining us. This is KPCW, and we will be back to talk about Airstream trailers.
Susan, thanks for joining us as well, and thanks for your work helping school kids in Nepal. It's a very worthy cause.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo has been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Back to Mountain Money. That was a fascinating conversation with a woman that climbed Everest and is sharing those skills in the business world. In studio with us now is Dmitry Sarkovsky and Casey Swartz. They're both with Intermountain Airstream. I understand you guys are the only authorized dealer and service center in the state of Utah. Is that correct?
Yes, we are.
So how did you decide to get into this business, and how did you decide it's, you know, I see the trailers on the highway, but how did you get comfortable that it's big enough in Utah to justify having a center here?
Well, it come to the point when being already in the Airstream industry for several years, you just look for the market and you start your calculation with the demographical and other criterias and make a decision based on the studies that it's a big enough market and it's a great market to be on. And
yeah, it's funny. In my peer group, I've heard more people in the last 18 months talk about Airstream than I have. I'm 50 years old than in the 49 years before that. What do you think's going on that's bringing this rejuvenation to the love of Airstream?
It all comes down to quality. People are not looking for that trailer that's going to fall apart. They want something that they can pass on down through the generations. Airstream's always had that reputation. That's what people are wanting. They want to buy something of quality. They're tired of wasting their money on stuff that's not going to last a test of time.
And what sets the Airstream apart? I know something of the subject because my dad was an Airstreamer and I spent a few nights in the Airstream. But what sets Airstream apart from every other travel trailer that's out there?
Well, it's a truly iconic brand that exists since 1931. This is the only one that survived through the Great Depression and the war and still in business. Anybody else was blown off the market during this time. There's one of the major things that set this product apart from any other in RV industry is that the design is based on aircraft design. The structure of the trailer has pretty much nothing but aluminum, and is similar to aircraft fuselage, which is a monocoque structure. It's pretty much the same. It has ribs made of aluminum and interior and exterior skins are all aluminum. So versus to any other RV trailers that made of the wood, that's what makes them
why we
so
still,
rugged.
We still see those that have been on the highways for 50 years they and they
never,
still look nice.
They never quit.
And what's so what is the construction of other most other travel trailers? Are they built on a wood frame or what?
Most of them are wood frame. Most of them are using composites. They're a very rigid structure. The whole point of the Airstream, because of its aluminum superstructure, its aluminum skin inside and out, it's meant to bend. It's meant to flex. It's meant to take the abuse from the road. It's meant to survive that. Whereas you put spring axles underneath a wood box, it's just going to get shaken apart.
So you don't see classic wood-framed travel trailers from the 40s and 50s out there, but still the Airstream can survive all that.
Well, yes, you do, but you can find trailers built in 40s and 50s on the road, but speaking about the fact that more than 70% of Airstreams since 1931 are still on the road. There's nobody can claim that even close, neither car manufacturer or RV manufacturers.
Yeah, Casey, there are a couple of guys in the Heber Valley who are restoring old vintage Airstreams, is that the case that if you find an old Airstream chassis, you can bring it back to life?
You can, and that's also one of the things that we specialize in as well. Take it down to her bones, restore it. The difference being is we are the authorized Airstream repair facility. We have the correct parts coming out of the factory. We have the technicians that have been to Airstream for certification. So, yes, you can go out. You can find a trailer from the 60s. I have people coming in all the time. I'm in my early 30s. Grandpa just gave me the trailer. I want to fix it up to use it with my kids. It's a great thing to build memories with.
Indeed. Now, there was an Airstream dealer in the south part of the valley, and I presume that they were still an Airstream dealer, but they were not. And there's been a void in the market until you came along, Dimitri.
Yes, Ardell Brown was the one that used to represent the Airstream brand in Utah. But lately, in the past 5 years, Airstream came up with new business model. So they now, what they want to see is exclusive to Airstream only. So you cannot have any other brands on the lot except Airstream. So for Ardell Brown, for Camping World, it was a dilemma to either drop the box trailers or drop the Airstreams from their line. And, of course, for them, the Airstream was a smaller segment versus to all the fifth wheels, so they did make the decision, and that's where we came, and we grabbed the market.
Well, that's a tough business decision, right? I mean, we all need cars, so you can see we're car dealers. Okay, you're either a Ford dealer or, you know, you don't go to a lot that sells new cars that offer different manufacturers. But in your case, you know, it's probably what, at most 1% of the population owns an Airstream? Maybe I'm wrong on that.
Yes, exactly. And here's when it comes to motivation and to people that are in Airstream industry. They are so passionate about the product. If you will analyze the investment, then, of course, there is a choice. You can open just a regular RV dealership and sell 100 units. By the time they sell 100, we're only going to sell one. So we're not profit focused as much as any other traditional dealership. So we are so passionate about our product that the profit become.
So let's talk about where your passion came from. Did you grow up in a family where you guys had an Airstream, or where did your passion for Airstream come from?
Absolutely not. I came from Moscow, Russia in 1997, and my first year when we did arrive.
Not many Airstreams in Russia, I'm
guessing.
There is
none. So I saw one Airstream on a highway, and since I saw the first one, I just really fell in love with this thing. I thought this is the most beautiful thing created, and I just was dreaming about having one, and finally About 5 years ago, I bought one and restored it, and I liked the process so much that I quit everything else I've been doing. And I launched a company that pretty much was just a restoration company. And then by dealing and having more involved with the Airstream factory, I learned that there is a market available, and one day just make a decision.
Is that what brought you to Utah, or were you already living here?
Yeah, I was living in Seattle.
Okay. Wow, that's a big commitment. Not only coming up with the financing to become a dealer, but uprooting your family and moving here to Utah. You don't see that in many industries. That amount of passion.
Indeed, it's kind of like a coveted franchise, like a McDonald's. If you get the call from McDonald's and they say, "We'll give you a franchise, but you have to move to Timbuktu."
Fair enough.
By golly, if you have a passion, you move to Timbuktu.
Well, for us, this movement was similar to movement from Russia. So when you're pretty much dropping everything and you just make a decision and you just jump in.
And you know, the irony is it does not get more American than Airstream, right? So you've done a full 180 from your days in Russia. How old were you when you came from Russia?
29.
And did you come here for school, or what brought you to the U.S.?
No, just for business opportunities.
You just didn't see much of a future in the Russia of those days.
Well, yes, exactly. It's just easier to establish yourself in the environment when everything is in much more order, not as much chaos as over there.
Well, and you've seen a lot of chaos.
Yes.
In your days, you left when you were 29. You saw a lot of changes taking place there.
Okay, so just have time for one last question. So let's make it a doozy. What is the most tricked out Airstream you've ever sold or worked on? How elaborate can an Airstream get?
It all comes down to the ambitions of the customer and the size of the budget. I mean, you can strip a trailer out. You can go as minimalistic as you want. If you want to make the big surround sound man cave in it, you can. The land yachts came out a couple years ago. It's an Italian yacht design cabinetry, glass shower, power dinette. I mean, you don't get much more tricked out, at least coming from the factory, than that.
I just know in my dad's case,
Airstream.
No, but he liked it so much he would park it next to the house and spend his time in the trailer, even when he had the house next door.
Yes. Perfect man cave.
So yeah, it is a great way to get away.
Okay, well, gentlemen, we thank you for joining us. In studio with us is Dmitry Sarkovsky and Casey Swartz with Intermountain Airstream. We wish you all the best in your new venture here. Good luck, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And Mountain Money will continue to talk about health insurance. It's open enrollment period. We'll talk about that with Mark Blocker when we come back.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
C&S Creative Services has been a proud supporter of KPCW since 1987. C&S Creative encourages you to think about your marketing in ways you never have before, to brand, analyze, search, optimize, advance, and profit, now and for tomorrow. For integrative marketing solutions, it's C&S Creative. 649-1234.
Well, that was fun learning about Airstreams, Larry.
I want one now.
I know it's a subject you've got a lot of passion for as well. We're going to switch gears now. In studio with us now is Mark Blocker. He's the managing partner of National Affinity Services. And we had Mark on last year about this time as well when it was open enrollment for Medicare and beginning to think about open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act. Mark, thank you for joining us again.
Well, thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate the opportunity to be here.
So right now is open enrollment for Medicare. So let's start there. Let's start with Medicare. What should people be thinking about for Medicare?
Well, it's a new year. There's 300 new companies that have entered the market, and there's 320 changed that have left the market. So one thing's certain, there's change going on in the market. And they have a lot of opportunities in here in Utah to deal with Regents and Select Health and all the big names here. So there's going to be a lot of choices.
So 300 new names, 300 names went out. How many providers are there? And it sounds like a lot of turnover. Why is there so much turnover?
You get niche players that come in the market and leave. Your traditional carriers have stuck in there and have been very stable. But there's over 1,000 opportunities for seniors throughout the nation, depending on where they live.
And what kind of decisions do folks that are on Medicare, what kind of decisions do they have to make now?
The folks in Medicare are looking typically at what their drug pay is going to be, whether they want a supplement or a Medicare Advantage plan, depending on where they live. So there's a lot of different choices, and you really have to be experienced and be able to hone in to figure out what the best situation is for them. And we do have agents that are available to help them do that are certified with all the insurance companies.
What the one you hear advertised the most is Medicare Part D. What is that exactly, and why does that get so much advertising time? There must be money in it, or it must be expensive if you don't have it.
Well, Medicare Part D is prescription drug plans available in 2015, and today there's over 30 different drug plans available out there to supplement what's available through Medicare, and so that's a really big product for those that are on maintenance drugs. They really are interested in seeing what their alternatives are and seeing what the costs are. So there's a number of different ways of tackling that.
I guess let me go back a step, and maybe I'm just naive and or uninformed, but wasn't Medicare supposed to take care of us, and we didn't need Medicare supplemental insurance and prescription drug coverage and all the rest?
Well, it's funny you say that. You know, over the years, there's always been different gaps in coverage. And even with the new Affordable Care Act, when people start open enrollment November 15th, you'll see not only the rates going up, we've seen some 30% rate increases just as of last Friday in Utah, but also they're seeing their deductibles go up, their copays going up, and their out-of-pocket maximums go up. So we've actually created a gap filler program just to take care of those people that really can't afford a $5,000 or $6,000 deductible.
So, Mark, you mentioned earlier you have a team that if people have questions about Medicare, they can call and get advice on that. Is that people's choice? They can just navigate this on their own on the web, or they can call up a professional team like yours? And is there a cost for the consumer to use services like yours?
No. We get paid from the insurance company, so there's no cost to the consumer. They can go on our website at nationalaffinity.net, and they can search for plans. Or they can go through the Park City Chamber Bureau. If they're a member there, they can go through their website and search for plans. If they're a realtor, they can go through the realtor's site at the Park City Board and search. Or if they're a member of the bar, they can go to the Utah Bar Association and search. We also do programs for Mountain America Credit Union. So if they're a credit union member, they can go through that site. Or they can come directly to us at nationalaffinity.net.
Very fine. Now let's move on to open enrollment. If you're in a health plan now, your only window to change your mind or change your coverage is coming up. Is that how it works?
That's correct. Open enrollment starts here November 15th and runs through halfway through February. The cutoff dates for effective dates are going to be the 15th of the month. So if you want a January 1 effective date, you've got to make up your mind and enroll by December 15th. Those are kind of key dates.
And last year there was a lot of challenges with people trying to enroll. They've had a year to get this under control. Is your experience, is your expectation that at least the process of signing up online is going to go smoothly as we'd all expect it to?
I think you're going to see it a lot smoother than last year.
It'd be rougher than last year.
It was pretty difficult. We helped a lot of people try to go through the system. One of the things that we do, we provide a member advocate service. And one of the things that we found is that people did go online and didn't necessarily get active coverage. There was a disconnect between HHS and the insurance company. So every applicant that comes through us, we actually call the insurance company and verify that that family has got their coverage and the amount is correct and the plan is correct. So that's the member advocate role that we play.
It seems you ought to, you know, you book an airline, you book a rental car, you get a confirmation code. On healthcare, they don't give you a confirmation code at the end saying you're all set?
We tell everyone that enrolls through any of the public exchanges to print a screenshot and keep it for their records. And then we've got one new client that actually had a misconnect on a premature baby and didn't come through us. And we're going to try to help him, but he went through a carrier. The carrier didn't pick up the child. It was a premature baby.
And now he's got probably $1 million in medical bills.
He's facing over $600,000 in medical bills. So it's those are the things that we do that prevent these situations.
Wow. Now the most or the only shocking thing you've said in the last 10 minutes is rate increases.
Right.
What size rate increases are you seeing, and what is the driver of such radical rate increases?
There's a couple things going on. One of the drivers creating the rate increase is the mandated benefits, and there are 10 mandated benefits in all the new plan designs. So there's guarantee issue, which is one thing, but all the benefits for wellness and all the other things are automatically included. They weren't necessarily included in plans before.
Those were the extra
right,
cost.
So if
options.
You're 65 years old, you're paying for maternity benefits, and you may not want them, but you're going to get them. You're also going to probably pay for dental insurance for children, even though you don't have children that are of that age. So that is creating some rate situations. The other thing that's happening is those that did get to keep their plan, a lot of people left those plans, and as they leave those plans, they kind of go into what we call death spiral, which means the rates cannot support the claims, because the people that tend to stay in those plans are the ones that are using them, and they're the ones that are on claim. And so they're rating those plans up. So about half the notices we see are you can keep your plan. The other half are here's your new rate, and here's the new plans you can get. So there's a lot of that flurry of activity happening right now.
And what about in the state of Utah? How are we different maybe than coverage nationwide? Do we have all the options that every other state would have, or where
do
we stand?
No, but Utah is pretty good. I mean, if you compare us versus, say, a California, we've got not as many choices in carriers, but we've got some good carriers. And frankly, our rates are more affordable than someone coming from California. They may be up to half less just because of the cost of care out there is so expensive.
Now, one of the big changes, as I understand it, is you can't be dropped now.
Correct.
So no matter what your record of claims is, that insurance company is married to you as long as you want to be married to it.
Right. That's correct. It's guarantee issue. There are no pre-existing conditions, so you get full coverage the day you start your coverage.
Okay. Let's go over the deadlines again. What do people need to be thinking about?
Well,
depending on their age and
I mean, for
life.
Major medical for pre-65 business, you want to be enrolled. I would want everybody to try to get their coverage effective January 1, even though you can go till February. And then you've got this little window for Medicare, and you've got to really have this done by around December 1st, even though it's a little extended beyond that. But we would not recommend you wait till the last second to try to get coverage. There will be a swell of activity this year. And, of course, the other thing we haven't forgotten about is that the fines are doubling if you don't buy coverage this time around. So they're going from 1% to 2%. And so a lot of those folks last year that thought that this was going to maybe go away are finding it didn't go away. And come tax time in 2015, that's another situation that people are going to have to deal with their accountant or CPA is this is a real line item in their tax return.
So shoulder season is coming here very quickly in Park City. The mountain biking, the hiking is going to be coming to the end. The ski resorts aren't going to be open yet. So we've got some things on our plates we need to be thinking about doing. One last question before we say goodbye. I know a fair number of folks that late 50s, early 60s that would retire, but they're concerned about health care coverage.
Right.
So they're giving up some of the healthiest years of their retirement, really, and they're working for the health care coverage. What does it cost for somebody early, late 50s, early 60s, decent health, husband and wife? What would you tell somebody calling? What's a general idea to get decent health care coverage?
You know, for a couple, you're going to see somewhere in the $600 to $1,200 range in Utah.
Per month.
Per month, depends on the range. One of the things that's happening is healthcare is now becoming one of the top three expenses in a household. And
and it's on its way to becoming the top expense if we're not careful.
If we're not careful. So one of the things we do is we help people navigate and try to find the best program that fits their needs.
Okay. That's the final word for Mountain Money for today on health insurance. Thanks, Mark Blocker, for joining us, managing partner of National Affinity Services. The website one more time?
It's nationalaffinity.net, or you can call 855-533-1776, and an agent would be happy to help you.
Okay, very good. We'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Thanks, Mark.
This is Sean Railton. I'm an agent with Park City Realty Group. I'm a 30-year Park City resident and a KPCW underwriter. I have been involved in the Park City real estate market since 1994 as an agent, an appraiser, and an investor. I can be reached at 649-1991 or Sean at ParkCityRealtyGroup.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Just a few minutes left, but let's finish up the thought on the market of last week, Doug, and what happened. And is it the start of the dreaded 10% correction everybody says is out there?
Well, you know, it's been 3 years since we've had a 10% correction, and that's a long time to go. We came close to it. We got down to about an 8% from the top. But, you know, I think I look at the fundamentals and I think overall we're going to be okay. I think you're going to look back in 3 to 5 years and you'll be glad you stayed the course. But the ride can be scary sometimes and it can be bumpy, and we certainly saw that last week.
Yeah. So are there any bargains out there, I guess? Did anything drop so much? And maybe that's the 500 drop intraday that ends up being a 300-point drop at the end of the day that some people.
Well, and I think that's a good piece of advice. If you're looking at individual stocks, I don't want to talk about individual companies, but if you're looking at individual companies and something like this happens, you might be able to pick up a bargain. So it can actually be a good thing, not a scary thing for you.
Yeah. Let's remind everybody, we have a candidate forum coming up tonight out at New Park Hotel in conjunction with the Park Record. We do this every election season. Everybody on the ballot at county and local level pretty much will be out at New Park tonight for a candidate forum, and you will have your chance to ask questions as well as a panel of crack journalists like ours and the Park Records. And starts with a social at 5:30. Get there early and mix with your friends and with the candidates from 5:30 to 6:30. We'll feed you and provide a beverage. So come on out at 5:30 and get some food, get a brewski maybe, or a soft drink, and then at 6:30 we'll start the forum and we will broadcast that live, but it's always more fun to be there in person. You know, this is one of those great community events that don't happen anymore in big cities, but this is everybody getting together in one room and eating, drinking, and talking politics.
And it's an important topic because you want to know where the politicians stand. You don't want to just go by name recognition. We want to thank our great sponsors on Mountain Money. We couldn't do this show without you. Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, and Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Thank you, gentlemen, for supporting.
Indeed. And it's, I think we're a minute early, actually. So let's talk about next week's show. We have next on Mountain Money, the book, The Reciprocity Advantage, A New Way to Partner for Innovation and Growth, by Carl Rahn, and he will be joining us next week along with other interesting guests. And you know, in the last 30 seconds, Doug, Airstream trailers, there are lots of trailers out there and trailers that do amazing things, but there is something about the Airstream. It's like a blast from the past.
It's a blast from the past, and it doesn't get much more American than that. And I love Dimitri's story, how he came over from Russia as a 29-year-old. And gave up everything, and now he's running an Airstream dealership here in Utah.
You know, and I was traveling. I managed to get a trip into Paris last year, and there was a Airstream down along the River Seine where they were selling refreshments. So, fun stuff.